I'm really excited to talk to you. I've had a chance to look at the course platform that you've been building, Terrain, and it's really great. And I like it because it's a subject matter that's different than the one I work on. I train software developers on our platform, and you're primarily focused on entrepreneurs and that kind of spectrum. And there's a lot of crossover there probably as well. But I really love what you're doing and some of the philosophies that you're putting forth as a platform. Before we get started, though, I wanted to ask you, how do you personally approach learning a new complex topic?
I dive in head first and try and figure it out as I go. The last relatively complex topic I've tried to teach myself was probably Bubble. And I just bought a template and tried to figure out how everything connected. And then whenever I hit a roadblock, then I'd go and look for a specific resource to solve that roadblock and then get moving again.
What's Bubble?
Oh, so Bubble.io it's a no-code/low-code visual programming software. It's what we built Terrain on. It's incredibly robust. It's honestly, I think I discovered it because I think the universe realized I needed to learn patience. And that was the purpose of Bubble in my life. It is the most exhausting piece of software I've ever had to use. But it's also, I mean, I haven't really come across any real limitations.
What made you choose Bubble or the kind of the no-code visual programming environment to build your platform? What was the driver there?
So we were looking at traditional dev initially, and I'd gone as far as putting down a deposit, and then COVID happened and the dev team got furloughed and I lost my deposit. So I was 20 grand out, and we'd already announced that we were going to be building Terrain. I didn't really have an out there. So I found Bubble after I saw a couple of ads, and I tried to build an app on it. It was, with the help of a template, it took me about 48 hours. So I thought, you know, this is possible. And then it took about 4 months to build Terrain on Bubble.
So aside from Bubble, because I don't know if it's all inclusive, I haven't used the tool. Are you using any other tools to kind of assemble and like coordinate the platform?
We're using Circle for the community part of it. We're using GatherTown for like the metaverse virtual space part of it. Zapier to link a bunch of things up. SendGrid for email and ActiveCampaign for marketing stuff. Yeah.
Do you think you're missing out by not having like a fully bespoke code, a full code platform, I guess?
No, not at all. I mean, Terrain is incredibly flexible. Like, we are able to build front end, back end simultaneously and deploy things right away. No one on my team has a professional dev background, but we've been able to, I mean, 4 months, I think, is a relatively short period of time to get anything out the door. And for people with absolutely no background in any kind of product development, I think it speaks to how robust Bubble is. And we have some pretty complex stuff going on the back end. No real bumps at all when it comes to like building it.
So I've spent 10 years and millions of dollars building a fully custom platform. And we're actually like currently in the process of stepping away from that ideology, because like what we've run into is like, I'm a programmer and I have 20 years of experience developing software. So like, it's my first tool, right? Like I go to that. But like, we're discovering like with our collaborators, because we're not like a software company, we're an education company. And in that sense, we don't need, you know, like we're not building software solutions. Like the core of it's really in the courses and the content and the design of that material over the kind of the courseware. Though there's like a baseline user experience that, and I think that there's a lot of ideas that you need to achieve as far as user experience goes. But it's cool that when I built it, there wasn't the no code revolution hadn't happened yet. So it's really interesting to see like this development of a full platform where you're able to serve people's needs in a robust way without having to, you know, like use Docker and Rails and Java, I don't know, whatever.
Yeah. I mean, we have, I think, like 4 lines of JavaScript on the entire site, and it's yeah.
What's a tool that you think people kind of are neglecting or maybe you wish existed since you've been doing this as a no code project? What's something that would kind of bring it all together for you if that thing exists or doesn't?
It's right now the only real way to link tools into integrations is through Zapier. Mm-hmm. There isn't, and if an integration for Zapier doesn't really exist, you're kind of in a spot where you have to get somebody to create an API for you. Yeah. There is no good solution that I've found that lets you create custom API with no code. I mean, that just isn't there yet. And that would be fantastic to have. So yeah.
Have you looked at Integromat?
Yeah, I mean, Zapier, Integromat, I feel like they're mostly in kind of the same wheelhouse. I know one of the things that we had a lot of challenges with getting Vimeo to integrate with Bubble so that we wouldn't have to like do things and go back and forth between it. And Zapier and Integromat, they glitch sometimes. And that's super frustrating when people are trying to use your platform and like watch the courses that you've created. So we ended up having to get a custom API created for that. But if there was just a simple way to integrate tools that aren't already integrated, like if there was Zapier in a way like that didn't rely on just the pre-existing tools in there, that would be fantastic. Like I know there are workarounds
where you could take action versus having to wait for the platforms to both of these platforms to actually do something, and you're kind of stuck in the middle. Yeah,
and you can do half of that now with webhooks, but like it's still not where it needs to be.
So when you say you created an API, does that mean like you had somebody kind of wrap the API and then you can use it, or what does that actually entail?
So we paid somebody to create a plugin for Bubble, and that was, I don't know what they did on the back end, but they got Vimeo to interact with Bubble in the way we needed it to, and then added it as a plugin and it worked fine.
So I wanted to walk it back a little bit, and we skipped over this. And what is Terrain? You built a course platform. It's Terrain. It's cool. It's for entrepreneurs. What is it and why does it exist?
Okay. It exists because it was born out of a lot of frustration with the industry. On my agency side, the ScribeSmith, we work primarily with course creators, but building a team and training a team, and we were consuming a lot of courses. Mm-hmm. And most of them were bad. Yeah. I think the number was around 20 grand when I looked at how much we'd spent on bad courses alone. And it was super frustrating because, I mean, there are good courses out there, but they're not necessarily the most popular ones. It's the ones with a good marketing team behind them that are really just getting all of that attention. And then on the flip side, despite being somebody who markets courses, I used to hate taking courses. The course taking experience itself was just not conducive to learning. Lots of platforms out there, they are selling internet real estate and creators are just paying to kind of upload the courses. So the end user there is really the creator. And that's kind of who all the features were being catered towards, the creator rather than the person actually taking the course. And Terrain kind of came out of all of those frustrations. And the idea was that we created a platform with high quality vetted courses that were actionable and designed to actually get people to finish them. Mm-hmm. So our courses are short. They're about, I think the longest one we have right now is about 2-ish hours. They're all done in an afternoon type courses. Lessons are about 10 minutes long each. And every lesson, at least now with the pivot where we're switched to a subscription model, all of the courses we're creating now have something really actionable that you can implement at the end of those 10 minutes. Templates, worksheets, all of that tied in. And then of course, there's the community aspect of it. So we run weekly experiments with the community, and they're encouraged to go out, test something in their business, and then report back to see if it worked.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Our goal is to kind of turn it into a learning ecosystem rather than just kind of a course platform. So yeah.
How do you balance the idea of building a learning platform for your instructor clients? So you have the people that are creating the courses and then the actual learners that are consuming those courses, and who kind of comes first in that equation?
So that was one of, so we actually launched Terrain December 2020, and we launched, the previous iteration of Terrain was a commission-based model where we would license the courses from creators and then take 25% of the sales. And when we were on that model, it was tricky because we had to balance creator expectations with learner expectations. We were serving two completely different groups of people. It was really challenging. And we also weren't getting the results that we were looking for. And also with a very small team, it was just a lot to manage. But since we've pivoted away from that into a subscription model, we've kind of eliminated the creator piece of it. So now instead of licensing courses, what we're doing is we're paying creators to create courses for us. And then we own the content. So that's just simplified it because we don't have to maintain like a good looking creator portal. We don't need to maintain those parts of it. And the on-demand courses that you see on our site now are essentially the creators who were part of the first iteration. We've kept their courses on because they're great courses, but we aren't taking any more of those on-demand courses anymore.
I was going to ask actually, like if you, because I noticed you were a subscription and you had kind of a dual model, and those, you know, like so the price ranges were vast in those, and you, yeah. you can kind of correlate that to their other products or courses, you know, like they kind of yeah. maybe exist in some format and in someplace else. And I was wondering with the subscription model, if you were paying royalties or how you work that, but it sounds like you're just, you're taking that as an upfront cost, compensating, and then you just run it. So you're not having to deal with that complexity. Is that basically it?
Kind of. So the on-demand side of it, people just, you can purchase those outside of the subscription. It's just whatever mm-hmm. People pay up front for it. We take the 25% and we hand over the rest to the creator. But for courses created within the subscription, all of those are things that we own outright. So there is no commission part of it at all.
That is very smart. We started and have a royalty-based system to where we have a pool and we have to pay everybody out every month. And what I ended up building was an accounting platform. And I never in my entire whole life did I think I would be a developer on an accounting platform. But I've dug my own hole. So I live in
not
it.
The most exciting project.
It's worked. It's interesting on a lot of levels, but it's, you know, like it's a distraction to me at the end of the day. And it just simplifies it. And we've been trying other models with kind of other properties. And like at the end of the day, I think that's the simplest for everybody yeah. is just to, you know, like not have ongoing monthly transactions, kind of that sort of deal works out very yeah. well. What makes a really good course in your opinion?
Oh, well, I mean, I think on like the most basic level, it has to do what it promises to do. Mm-hmm. Like if I think a lot of courses out there, they promise lots of intangible things. So I think the first thing is have a very tangible objective and then mm-hmm. deliver on that objective. And there are courses that kind of make the instructor look really smart and really yeah. good at what they do, but they kind of almost alienate the person taking it. So those are definitely bad courses. So a good course makes the learner feel like one that they've been able to grasp something really quickly. They make them feel excited about what they're learning, and then it gives them something that they can implement right away. So, yeah.
Yeah, like some outcome yeah. they're trying to achieve, or they're able to accomplish yeah. something immediately from this.
Yeah, 100%.
Outside of your platform, what's a really good course that you've taken? Because you said you spent $20,000 on bad courses, and I'm a course consumer as well, and I have some opinions, and I mean, a lot of them are just like, wow, why are you even doing this? Like, it doesn't make sense to me. This shouldn't even exist. You're probably harming people. But I've taken some that have literally changed my life in like a profound way where, you know, it was like, just opened up completely new avenues. So what's a really good course that you've taken in the past?
I mean, most of these are going to be in the copywriting kind of space. Anything by Joanna
Lieb
is fantastic.
Oh yeah. Like yeah. Oh. The copy hacker stuff. Is,
yeah. Copy hacker.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, nothing else comes close to that. And she ticks every box when it comes to a great course. Kirsty Fanton created Brain Camp, which is fantastic. Something kind of a little bit outside of the copywriting space, a really good one is Linda Perry's Mindset Mastery. That was a really okay. good one because I went through all of the imposter syndrome-y phases, like the self-doubt, all of that. I started this business very young, had no experience whatsoever. So she helped me, that course in particular really helped me break through a lot of those blocks.
Get your
my head straight. Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. For me, the course that I've taken was Amy Hoy and Alex Hillman's 30x500, which is kind of it's a product development course. And I have this like strange fascination with the overlap of instructional design and product development and UX, because I think mm-hmm. like instructional design is very slept on. And the idea of how do you build something that people are going to actually, I feel like there's a, you know, like we jump to marketing and kind of the solution end of the spectrum. But like, if you are building the wrong thing, that makes it really difficult. And I think I've read in some of your literature where that's one of the big parts of your business is the consultancy is helping people yeah. build something that people actually want, and then actually delivering it is, and you know, like that I think it's just critical, because we often build the wrong things. And I think a lot of these, they get really well marketed or jumping into the solution and the marketing over the substance and the outcomes that they're actually achieving for their customers and learners, is my experience.
Yeah. I mean, I think most people can sell anything with a good marketing team behind it. Mm-hmm. And that's part of why there's so many crappy products out there. Should you be selling it is the real question. It's just like, and it's the same in the course space, really. It's like people create courses because they're told it's a way to scale their business. Mm-hmm. And there are people who have no business creating courses at this point. So, yeah.
Well, and you know, it's like people have expertise and we want to share that. And it is definitely marketable, but your expertise doesn't translate to instructional design or yep. you know, necessarily a course. What support do you provide now for course creators? Like when you come in and you start, like what's the process from like, here's an idea to the published product?
Is this on the Terrain side?
Yeah, on Terrain.
Yeah. Usually it's kind of the other way around. We reach out to creators when we identify a topic that we're looking to have on Terrain. And we've usually like vetted that this person is a real expert. We've, you know, looked at, I mean, there are times where I would go out and purchase another course of theirs just to see, make sure that they're the real deal. And then we set up an appointment with them. And the first step is really, if they're interested, they would send in an outline for the course. And since our courses are very specific and they're always in a how-to style, especially with the pivot to the subscription. And so it's almost like, if this is, it's working backwards. If somebody needs to achieve this desired end result, what steps do we need to go through and take them through to get them ready for it? And that's really what the outline looks like. So they need to decide the difficulty level. Like, is this for beginners, mm-hmm. people with some experience, et cetera, the set objective. And once they have that outline done, they will work on putting together a script. And then the script is then reviewed by a panel of our peers. So these are people with varied experience, different industries, et cetera, just to make sure that one, we're checking for accuracy of information, but also clarity. There's so many times where like things that make sense to the expert may not necessarily make sense to everyone. There's a lot of that curse of knowledge stuff going on. So all of those kinds of things are looked for. And when that's ready, the creator can either produce the course themselves or it's handed over to our team and we'll handle production. We have a voiceover artist, we have like decks and all of that created. And that's really it.
What percentage of those do you think are where the subject matter expert, the person that you've approached, is the person that produces it versus having somebody else do the actual recording, the voiceover?
I would say it's been a 50-50 split, mostly because if they are marketers and they have their own business already, they opt to do it themselves. But if these are people that we're kind of approaching from more traditional industries, like there's one project that we're working on right now, we're speaking to an accountant. And it's just, you know, understanding the numbers within your small business. And they work at a local accounting firm. So they aren't really interested in building a brand or building authority. They just have this deep expertise and they were happy to be compensated for their time. So
paid as a consultant or an expert basically. At that point, right?
Yeah.
Do you think it matters? And I struggle with this. I'm always like, well, do we need somebody with, because it does help to have somebody with an audience because you obviously get some amplification. But at the end of the day, does it really matter?
We found that it hasn't. I think that's one of our early value props was learn from the best, not the most famous. Mm-hmm. And it, as long
that's
as
a good one. I like that.
Thank you. Rather proud of that one. So yeah, it doesn't really matter to us as long as they're an expert in there.
So you talk about light bulb moments in courses and these things where we just like, it goes ta-da for us and we kind of see the light. What can we do as course creators or people helping to design courses to manufacture or encourage or, you know, otherwise present light bulb moments to learners?
I think a big part of that is, and I'm really guilty of this. I know some of the early scripts that I wrote, I would just jump to the conclusion without showing my working and how I kind of mm-hmm. arrived at that. I think it's really, really important to kind of walk people through your logic and your thinking so that they can then take that and be able to apply it in different contexts. And that's kind of where those moments come from. So showing your working examples also really helpful. And then the third part of it is, I think, asking questions. And it sounds really, really simple, but I think just posing something as a question rather than kind of just straight up stating it as a fact can actually get people to engage with it a little bit more and encourages those light bulb moments.
We have a term that we use, and it's essential questions, where you have, you know, some question that doesn't, it isn't a yes or no question, and it's something that you can debate or think about, but really like makes you kind of inspect what it is you're doing. And those, and I like them because they usually carry over across topics too. So like a truly essential question isn't going to be valid for one course. You're going to see this kind of repeated and come up over time. And when you're, you know, like if, especially when you're talking about something like entrepreneurial ventures or building a business or, you know, like these topics that you're going into, there's a lot of core where it's all going to weave, and it's like, oh, these things are all connected. It's a graph kind of situation, yeah, I think.
For sure.
So I wanted to kind of switch into the idea of marketing and the platform and the individual courses. And one of the things that I've heard you mention is this idea of being or creating lighthouse content, like things that you can do outside of the courses to like bring people in and attract visitors. And I would assume that means both learners and in some cases, even the course creators themselves. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering what does lighthouse content mean, and what kind of content are you creating that would serve as a lighthouse?
I mean, I think this is an embarrassing question to answer a little bit because it's a cobbler's shoe kind of situation.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
You're not alone. I don't think you're unique in this.
Yeah. It's something we help our clients do on the Scribesmith side. Mm-hmm. It's something that we have struggled to do on the Terrain side just because we're a team that kind of tackles a lot of different, like every person is tackling lots of different parts of Terrain. So it's always like the marketing side is, it's embarrassing for a marketer to admit to this, but it's always just been on the back, taken a back seat. But to answer your question, lighthouse content is anything that helps you kind of stand out and establishes that you have a perspective and an opinion, and it's unique. So like one of the challenges I think that a lot of people have with their marketing is that if you take their brand name off of it and slap somebody else's on, it'll sound, and like nobody would really be able to tell. There is no distinctive message. There's nothing unique about it. And they don't really stand for anything. So I think having that and then being able to showcase that in different places, like being able to have a distinctive viewpoint when you're on a podcast, being able to have a distinctive viewpoint when you're in a webinar or even just with a blog post or in your emails, that's kind of where the idea of a lighthouse content comes from. It stands out. People can read something of yours and know immediately that it's yours.
Yeah, it reflects your values and kind of actual opinions and not just kind of
the fluffy marketer talk.
Yeah, the H1, this will change your life, right? Yes. Like, and it doesn't matter what the product is. It's just going to be life-changing. Trust us. Sign up.
Yeah, basically.
So one of the things that I've experienced, and I assume most other people that are doing course platforms, and particularly with subscription models, is people will come in, they'll sign up, they'll learn what they need, and then leave. And you mentioned the like weekly challenges and keeping people engaged. And what's your, you know, like kind of what's your go-to to prevent that churn and keep people in to where they continue to get value out of the platform beyond what they originally signed up for?
So we have an interesting strategy for this. We started implementing it, and we haven't gone all the way yet. It's kind of a Q1 project, but what we're doing is we're incentivizing community participation by actually paying people to be there. So what we're doing is almost like a fractional revenue model. We take a percentage of what we have earned that month. Mm-hmm. And we have something on the platform called peak points, where people earn these points for completing courses, but also for interacting in our community, showing up for co-working, answering questions, asking helpful questions, things like that. They earn points for this. So then we take all of the points earned in the month, divide them by that percentage, and then essentially you get the value of one peak point for that month. And then people are paid out for whatever they've earned that month. And what we're seeing is we haven't started paying people out yet, but we have started encouraging people to kind of start building those points, start kind of interacting in the community, etc. And we've seen that go up since we've kind of started introducing that model. We also do have a reward system where we give people NFTs for, you know, different things on the platform. Like we did NFTs for our lifetime members. We have stuff coming out for like most active in the community, those kinds of things. And yeah, and the fact that the payouts are in either USD or Bitcoin or Ethereum, that's definitely helped as well. So people feel like, I think anybody who's spending time in the community, they're creating value. And it's important to us that they're compensated for it. And for people who are really active in the community, it's totally possible that they'll earn more than the $19 a month that they're paying for their subscription. So
that's really
it's almost a no-brainer.
Because we talked earlier about paying royalties, and now you're actually paying royalties, but you're paying royalties in a way that people wouldn't. It's kind of that the is it Web3 vibes? Is that what's going on?
That's what's going on.
Well, and I dig it, and I think like it's one of the coolest things of that kind of community and that push is this idea that the consumers can also share in the profits of the overall enterprise. And that's pretty new, right? Like, I don't think that's something that we've ever seen before. And, you know, we have airdrops and people get NFTs, and in terms of other course platforms, like Build Space has been interesting to watch what they do. And, you know, like, you complete a course and you get airdropped an NFT, and it's just fun. That part is fun. But then there's the idea of people creating, you know, DAOs out of it too, and sharing in that and doing all that, which is more complex and kind of has that same spirit. But I think that's an interesting way. And I'm also, I don't know if you might be interested in this, I think that, you know, people talk about blockchain not being useful, but I feel like education transcripts is one area where, like, blockchain really makes like a ton of sense to me. It's immutable. It's trusted sources. You can verify signatures back. And I'm like, wow, that actually is a use case that I'm thinking makes a ton of sense, frankly.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, I agree completely. I think education, any kind of like online signing, like anything like HelloSign, DocuSign, those kinds of things, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, like, to me, that's just, it just fits, and it takes a lot of friction out of it. And it's like, you don't need a fast database. It removes all those kind of complaints. Yep. It's like, okay, well, why wouldn't we do that? I know you've talked about this and Facebook ads and running ads across the internet. Is that something you participated in with Terrain, or have you been able to avoid that?
It was a part of our early strategy with like our first iteration when we had all the, you know, courses by 50 creators, all of that. It also happened just as iOS 14 launched. Facebook ads were basically just a no-go for us at all. And it was a lot harder because at that point we were selling 50 different courses by creators rather than one product, which is our membership. So it didn't work out. We had terrible returns on that. It was just a bad idea.
Where's the top of your funnel now? Like, how are people finding Terrain?
Honestly, it's just been word of mouth. Mm-hmm. And we have a free trial and people have been signing up for that. But right now what we are in the process of launching, we literally submitted it to the Google Chrome extension store this morning. We have a Chrome extension coming out that lets people who are watching YouTube videos pull the YouTube video onto onto Terrain's learning interface and take notes and create action items, etc. And this came out, one, because I got really used to our interface and it was great to be able to take notes and stuff while I was watching YouTube videos. But then we heard that complaint come up over and over again from people who were using Terrain, and they're just like, this is a great interface. I wish I could use it for other kinds of content. And we're experimenting now with using that as our top of funnel because it's free and it gets people into our ecosystem, gets people used to our interface. And then we also are able to promote relevant content based on the kinds of YouTube videos they're watching.
I take it that's probably not a no-code project.
No, that wasn't.
Is that something you commissioned and had somebody build for you? Or is that something that you built in-house?
It's something that I taught myself to build after like 35 million YouTube videos. It was definitely a challenge. It's taken me. I'm sure it would have taken someone with more knowledge a couple of hours, but it took me a couple of months. But I'm really proud of it. And it's partially on no code. I mean, when it pushes people over to Terrain, I mean, that part is obviously on no code.
Sure.
But like the extension part.
So just in that same lines, have you ever seen Frame.io? I'm just talking about tools now that I've liked lately. Have you seen Frame.io?
It's the video editing tool, isn't it?
Well, it's more like a video. It's like an interactive video review tool is how I would maybe describe it.
Yeah,
it's
been, sorry, yeah.
I spent the last year like rebuilding our video player, add this to like integrate notes and stuff, because one of the things that I think is missing, and I hope they're not listening, but I really don't like Teachable. And like every time I have to, like, I'll watch a course there and it's fine, but it's like one of my least favorite experiences, because as you mentioned earlier, it's like, okay, well, I have 12 videos, I'm going to slap them up there and then I'm done. I got a course. And like, you're left in this situation where I have a video on one screen and I'm trying to take notes. I end up like, actually, literally, I have a system where I go through and rip all of the videos and move them into a system I can actually stand. And like a lot of times I actually move them into to where I can then take notes, and like it has hotkeys and I'm just taking notes. I just want to transcribe it. I want my notes and I want to be in my learning environment and I want to stay there. And I don't want to have to jump around to do all the things I need to do. And I know that's important. And what other kind of aspects have you added to your platform that kind of speak to this idea of staying inside of what you're learning without having to jump all around windows and all that stuff?
We try and keep it as distraction free as possible. So you can't, it's not the next core lessons and stuff are not immediately visible. You have to like toggle to actually see it. Notes are actually on the side. You don't have to scroll away from the darn video to actually take notes. It used to drive me nuts. because every single platform has notes under the video and it's stupid. Like they didn't think that through. Searchable transcripts and like transcripts that let you jump to specific points in the video. Again, no-brainer stuff that you just don't see on a lot of these platforms. One thing that I really like that we have is the ability to create action items from within that learning view. So you can, and we've been working on the integration for this. It's just, it's coming, but you will be able to integrate it with your Asana, your Trello, whatever. So as soon as you create an action item on Terrain, it gets added to your project management tool as well. Oh,
cool.
So yeah. So those are kind of little things that we have in place, but yeah.
Have you like balanced your, because you have ScribeSmith, so you have an agency and you're building a learning platform, and has that balance shifted over time, or do you split your time, or how does that work for you?
This question assumes that I have balance and a life outside of work.
I don't, so I understand.
Oh man.
From work, I work. What are you talking about?
I work, exactly. I work some more. No, I think for the last 2 years, especially since like ever since we had the idea for Terrain, the balance has definitely shifted. I'm very fortunate that ScribeSmith is mostly in a place where it runs like clockwork. No real trouble there. I have a phenomenal team. They handle most of it. So if it wasn't for Terrain, I think I would have phenomenal work-life balance. I would have more life than work, which would be great. But
yeah, you wouldn't have spent the last 2 months building a Chrome extension.
This is true. I mean, I probably would have still done it because it was so much fun, but it is, yeah,
it's a fun time.
Yeah,
I love it. I have hobbies and they're all leisure work. That's what my term for it is, leisure work. And not, you know, like I think people should find whatever balance they need and, you know, whatever is good for you. And like I function that way and I just like kind of enjoy it. It is, I don't know if it's relaxing. It's just like, it's what I do and what I
it's like stimulating.
To do. So I
yeah.
keep doing it and, you know. Like there's everybody should achieve whatever balance they can for themselves, I guess. My last question is, what's your most audacious goal for Terrain?
Oh man, I haven't said this out loud to anyone yet. So I started my business while I was based in Qatar, and that came with its own set of challenges, just like building outside of North America, lack of legitimacy, all of those kinds of things. And I know so many people in other parts of the world who are struggling to kind of get their businesses off the ground. My goal, my big, ridiculous goal for Terrain is to someday get to a point where we have helped 1,000 people from outside of North America build businesses that are getting them at least 50 grand a year. And yeah, that would be the dream. Yeah.
I think that's great. And I love that. And I know that that speaks to your values and that part of what Terrain does now is give back to entrepreneurs around the world. So you're not, that isn't a future goal. You're actively working on this goal, correct?
Yeah, we are. We are.
Yeah.
We're nowhere near it, but someday.
No, and but just putting it up there and setting it as a milestone, I think you'll get there. Like just from everything I've seen and talking to you and listening to you and interacting with your platform and seeing kind of the quality work that you produce and the values that you're putting out there, I think you're going to get there. Like that's how I feel about it if I was making a prediction. So
thank you. That means so much. Thank you.
Juan, it was really fantastic to talk to you. I feel like we could talk for a long time because we have a lot of crossover in our interests and what we do and what we like to do for leisure work. But for now, I'm going to call it a day. And I really appreciate you taking the time to chat with me.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. This was great.
Cheers.